Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Amara Enya, Stephanie Hitt, Nick Kalm, and Christopher Johnson. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, if you want to join us on the web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. That's each and every Sunday night, the audio and video portion of this broadcast. There are 43 days to go before Election Day, and there is but one day to go before the big presidential debate, the showdown between Hillary Clinton. We don't know if he's going to be in the first row or not. Between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And again, I should mention for those who listen to this program on a regular basis, I think you know we do the program from the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and one of our prized possessions is the close-up camera used in the very first debate. In fact, what you're looking at if you're watching on television, this is about 15 feet from where we do Beyond the Beltway each and every Sunday night. It is the close-up camera used on John F. Kennedy in that debate, as well as the Secret Service diagram that was used to get both candidates in and out of the studios of WBBM television. So there hasn't been much made of it today, but tomorrow is the exact anniversary. 56 years ago, tomorrow is when television and politics changed forever in the city of Chicago. There was some hype to what happened 56 years ago. It isn't anything like we are seeing today or saw on all the Sunday morning shows. Everybody is doing their countdowns. And as part of what will take place at Hofstra University tomorrow is what's been going back and forth just the last several days as to which guests, I just alluded to Bill Clinton, which guests are going to be in the first row. And Hillary Clinton sort of, I guess, began the tit for tat when he suggested that Mark Cuban, a billionaire who has his own political interests and his own talk show, his own stardom, if you will, celebrity status, that he is going to sit in the first row as the guest of Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump suggested in a tweet that Jennifer Flowers was going to be invited. She is a former mistress of Bill Clinton when he was the governor for 12 years of Arkansas. And it was revealed later today that she's really not coming, and back and forth. They finally acknowledged it. But so many of the Sunday shows today were dealing with this belief that Jennifer Flowers was going to be there. It brought off all the stories about Jennifer Flowers and Bill Clinton. So for people who are under 35 who don't even know who Jennifer Flowers is, Donald Trump accomplished sort of what he wanted, I think. Stephanie, what's your take?
Actually,
on this?
I thought it was a very clever response, he did. He reminded people that, at least with regards to women and the women issue, he put in that hint there that Hillary and her husband Bill and their attacks on women, verbal and otherwise, maybe they're not the best people for women.
Christopher Johnson, I want to get your reaction. You're an attorney, you're a Democrat, a real strong Hillary Clinton supporter, but just on this issue, the way that both campaigns have sort of played who's sitting in the first row.
They're poking at each other, but I really don't think that it – I mean, it's a distraction. It's fodder for the Sunday shows, but I really don't feel as though – you mentioned, Bruce, that people under 35 may not even know who Jennifer Flowers is.
Right.
So we're going back to, what, 1992? And – I think it's kind of a non-issue, actually. She may be, if she shows up, which the campaign's vacillated whether she's actually going to be in the audience or not in the first row. I don't think she is, actually.
Will it be news if Bill Clinton is or is not in the front row?
I think Bill Clinton will probably be in the first row. I mean, he is hopefully going to be the first husband. I'm looking forward to that.
Nick, what's your take on this? You're a Republican, but just as to how this issue is playing over the last 24 or 36 hours.
Well, I think it shows that if you're going to play head games with Donald Trump, you're marching down a foolish path because he is the master at that. And I think that's, as your intro talked about, that's certainly what happened in this case.
Am I right? Do you think that that Trump responded to the volley in a more demonstrative way than Hillary expected?
He responded in the way that Trump was going to respond. And being under 35, I do vaguely remember Jennifer Flowers. And I think what happened is this reminded people who, someone like me who was very young at the time that this came out, people probably went back and researched who she was and found out a little bit more about that backstory. And I do think that plays into people's perceptions of Hillary Clinton.
When this subject first came up, this was early in Trump's primary campaign. The question came up was if Hillary plays the gender card, that Donald Trump was going to return fire and he was going to return it using the issue of all the women who have alleged relations with Bill Clinton, either consenting or not, which again, Stephanie referenced, and what Hillary Clinton did to their reputations or alleged attempts at the reputation. So, it's, as this goes forward, this seems to be another reminder to Hillary that, you know what, this issue might come up. It's sort of a warning that this issue might come up. And frankly, I guess in response to my own question to you, Christopher, and that is, I wonder if this sends a signal to the Hillary Clinton campaign, you better not send Bill Clinton to sit in that first row.
It's not a game.
Because right now, we know, according to what Pence and Conway, Kelly Conway said today, that Jennifer Flowers is not going to be there. But is Paula Jones going to be there? Is Juanita Broderick going to be there? Are there other people that are going to be there that would keep Bill Clinton from showing up there? Because frankly, if they showed up, they could steal the debate. I want to get the response from the Democrat. I mean, you're a smart guy, but I mean, it seems to me that Bill Clinton may be trapped as to whether or not he can go to his own wife's debate.
The campaign has been a media circus unlike we've ever seen before, right?
Right.
I mean, I think we can all acknowledge at the table that it really has been a circus. We have Mr. Trump, who is a celebrity unto himself, and Hillary Clinton, who is a celebrity as well. So I really think the voters, the undecideds, are really looking for substance. I think they really are looking for substance from this first debate. They want to hear about the issues. They want to hear about the economy. And whether Bill Clinton's in the audience or not, I don't think that really matters.
Nick, I want to get Nick's response. What do you think of that, Nick?
Well, I think certainly if any of the various women that have been linked to Bill Clinton over the years are there, and Bill shows up, I think he has to show up. I think if he doesn't show up, it's going to be a news story in and of itself.
Well, and I think what's interesting is everyone's talking about, you know, the sideshow that would occur, which, you know, Trump is very good at throwing the sideshow.
Yes, he is.
And but I also think he's a little smarter than that. What I think would be genius on his part would be not to announce who's going to invite, but on that night, sitting in the front row, I'd like to see the widows and family members of the Benghazi. And then we talk about real issues.
And the morning show's mentioned that today as well.
Yeah, yep. That is a possibility. So I guess part of the setup for tomorrow is who's sitting in the front row. Not something you usually discuss in a debate. 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. Wherever you are listening in the country and whatever side of the political fence you sit on, I want to get your reaction to the pre-debate negotiations and head games that are going on between the two candidates.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We continue with Beyond the Beltway. And one of the issues in this campaign has been whether or not traditional Republicans were going to come home and support Donald Trump, who had offended some people within the Republican Party during a very down and dirty Republican primary process. On the other side, people have also wondered whether the real strong supporters of Bernie Sanders would come back and be enthusiastic in their support of Hillary Clinton. According to the most recent polls, more Republicans are returning to the fold than Democrats. There's about an 8-point difference. So let me ask you, Amara, because you, the times you've been on this program, you've been a supporter of Bernie Sanders. Where are the Sanders voters? We haven't heard much about where the Sanders vote is going recently. It has not helped Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, very much. Maybe it's helped Gary Johnson a little bit. But where are those like yourself? How do they feel about this race right at this moment? Has Hillary made the sale to you?
There's still some significant challenges with her making the sale to former Bernie Sanders supporters. There was the rhetoric and the principles behind the Bernie Sanders campaign really spoke to a very large percentage of the population. And she hasn't really been able to transfer that. Sanders' enthusiasm has not really transferred to Clinton. Now, to her credit, she has adopted many of the, especially on economic policy, some of the rhetoric that he used. But I think there's just a severe frustration with the status quo of which Hillary Clinton represents. And there's a frustration with this notion of having your candidate chosen for you, which what happened in the Democratic Party with Debbie Wasserman Schultz really frustrated and was very off-putting to Bernie Sanders supporters. So we're still processing it.
Chris, what can she do tomorrow night to close the deal with the Democrats?
I don't think she probably will close the deal tomorrow night, actually. I think that she's going to be reaching out. I think during the convention, I think we saw some crossover, but I don't think she's probably going to close the deal tomorrow. I think it's going to take time. I think that's something that she understands, she knows. I think that she's going to be reaching out tomorrow. I think what she faces is, issues of trust, issues of credibility. I think that she will be reaching across party lines tomorrow. I don't think necessarily tomorrow will be about Bernie Sanders supporters. I think it will be. Go ahead,
but also the question of how do you make the case for Hillary Clinton without saying Donald Trump's name? That is a very legitimate question that a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are asking. How do you make the case for Clinton without using the fear of a Donald Trump presidency? And I don't.
Well, but part of that is to say. You know what? You're wasting your vote if you vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein.
And there's
a lot of people who are in the Bernie Sanders field and maybe in some Rand Paul Republicans that may be beefing up. That's how he's only at 5% according to the recent polls.
Mm-hmm. Right. And but Sanders again, himself has said that this is not the election for a protest vote. But again, because of the reason why so many Sanders supporters supported him, it's more about principles. And so I think there are still some voters who just based on principle can't bring themselves, at least yet, to vote for.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, so are the Sanders supporters going to vote for Hillary, vote for Jill Stein, or stay home?
Either Stein, some will go to Hillary. I mean, there are a number who are going to Hillary. Some will vote for Jill Stein on the Green Party ticket because of the platform of the Green Party. And there may be some who are, especially those who are really off put by what happened within the Democratic Party, who might end up.
There are some states, New Hampshire, Iowa, and Colorado, where Gary Johnson is at 9, 10, or 11%. And in those states, he could tip one of those states to another candidate.
Bernie really added to this campaign. I really feel as though, and I think Hillary Clinton really acknowledged that throughout, that this was not going to be a gimme. And it really wasn't a gimme. I think that Bernie's ideas, his supporters, his passion for the country and really a progressive ticket, really, I think that really added value, if you will, to the campaign.
I think Republicans would agree with that as well.
Well, and I think one of the interesting things that I think this debate is really going to be about is also speaking to the bases and saying, all right, can you put aside your concerns about maybe the candidate on your side to actually get off the couch and go vote? Like, for example, that are the, you know, can Hillary, she may not convince the Sanders supporters on every policy. However, can she overcome her own concerns about trustworthiness to actually inspire enough people to actually get up and come and vote for her?
Can they excite their own bases? That with the pneumonia, right? I mean, we saw that very recently that there was this flub.
It's a flub, right.
And in my book, that was kind of a minor thing that people get sick. And I think it's a testament that she kept going, right? I mean, she took a couple days off. I mean, we have working moms that are out there every day in, day out. And really, that's what we do. So I think that's admirable. But people on the
Admiral, because in that particular case, according to what her own team put out, that on the Friday before the collapse took place, or the buckling, is I'll use the word buckling, before that took place, her doctors had ordered her to slow down, get off the trail. She didn't follow the advice of her doctors. Now, is that a judgment issue?
No, I think Hillary Clinton has never been a slow down sort of person. She's made her life's career as a public servant. So I think maybe that is a challenge for her, that she, you know, should have heeded her doctor's advice, that she should have slowed down. She didn't. But that doesn't speak to her character. That speaks to her determination to be on the campaign trail, to be out there.
Right.
I find that's a plus.
You're saying it's a minor thing. I think that video of her stumbling and being helped into the
and how van she handled
is
it.
Going to be, if there is a factor in Trump winning and her losing, that's going to be the deciding factor.
I don't think it's that significant. I mean, we've had sitting presidents. We had George Bush in George Bush Senior in was it Japan where
he was already president. He was already president.
Well, a lot of people, and it does go to her. I think the issue went to her trustworthiness, and that is here she is. There's a situation. She's covering it up. The story doesn't come out right away. Not everybody knows the story. Then you hear a story, you don't know if it's believable. All of a sudden, we're saying this is a candidate whose initial instincts, whenever there's trouble, is to cover up and then lie.
I'm inclined to agree.
That happened in Benghazi. That happened about the Clinton Foundation. And it happened about Pneumonia Gate. And I think a lot of people see it as one of those kinds of
things. I haven't heard
incidents.
It called Pneumonia Gate.
I haven't heard that either. But I'm inclined I'm inclined to agree. I think there's merit to being forthright. And this is something that I had talked about with Benghazi and talked about with so many other issues. It could have been minor, just something as simple as releasing a statement that said, yes, a week ago it was recommended that she stay home. She didn't, and this happened. Just be forthright. Working women in particular do this every day. They go to work, they're sick, but they still keep trucking. So I don't think that it shows her as a weakness. I think the handling of it and the lack of forthrightness is a weakness.
Does the endorsement of Ted Cruz, will that, other than the just drop jaw reaction of a lot of people when they finally heard the words that he had endorsed him, I mean, is that going to move some conservatives that might be sitting on the sidelines?
I think so, because I think Ted Cruz reminds...
And you were not Ted Cruz people in the primary.
I was not a Ted Cruz person or Trump, but what he does is he reminds people, and conservatives in particular, why Trump on at least one issue matters, and that is the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And he's made that issue very clear.
But that's different, though. The Supreme Court justices that he has laid out, Trump has laid out, that's done more in terms of keeping conservatives in the fold than this belated
but
endorsement.
I think Cruz is a reminder of it.
Who did more to hurt his own, who I think destroy his own political career with his appearance at the RNC.
I would agree with that. But I think having it out there, and the reason why he's doing it and what he's saying is a good reminder to wake people up.
This question, and I'm going to ask it on for both parties, if Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz had been the nominee at this moment in time, would they be ahead of Donald Trump or behind Donald Trump? I want to get our Republicans to react to that.
I would say they'd be behind. I think because one of the things that Christopher was saying in the break is absolutely right. Trump has tapped in to a frustration, which, again, I think a lot of Bernie movement similarly has tapped in. A lot of people who were disaffected from the political process have been brought into it because of it. And I think they have they've been energized by Trump in a way that none of the other 16 candidates would have energized.
Stephanie?
And I agree. I think one of the things that Trump has managed to do that Cruz, Rubio, and many more establishment Republicans is hit the nail on the head on – he had his pulse on what is frustrating voters on both sides.
Let me ask this same question on the other side. if Bernie Sanders was the Democratic nominee right now, would he be ahead or behind Hillary Clinton? Christopher?
Possibly ahead. The style. So comparatively speaking, Bernie has a style. He carries his own luggage. We like to see that, right? I mean, he is not being helped to the airport. And Donald Trump appeals stylistically to the electorate in a certain way. So, you know, we're not looking in the rearview mirror here, but perhaps I think Bernie Sanders actually might be up.
I definitely think he would be up, without a doubt. It's his style, but it's also his substance. It's his message. It's his consistency. And the fact that on both sides of the aisle, both Republicans and Democrats alike, saw him as a consistent, nice guy, someone that they felt that they could work with now far fewer negatives than Clinton.
Christopher mentioned stylistically. What we learned 56 years ago tomorrow in that very first debate is it wasn't just what you said that was important. It's how you looked saying it. So looking at this as a cosmetic experience tomorrow, I think most people would agree that if you get into chapter and verse in the weeds of issues, Hillary Clinton is light years ahead of Donald Trump. But on the issues of style, no one, I don't believe, votes for anybody they don't like. So isn't being the most likable person at the end of that 90 minutes tomorrow the most important thing?
Bruce, I don't think either one of them has a chance of being likable, but I really don't. I don't, because there's so many people who dislike both of them. But on style points, if Trump does not lose his...
We got to pause. Back shortly.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Bruce Dumont, back at Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, a reminder that tomorrow is the 56th anniversary of the very first presidential debate. If you go to the Facebook page for museum.tv, or Museum of Broadcast Communications, Facebook page, Museum of Broadcast Communications, here's what you're going to find, because in 1985, the museum did the 25th anniversary celebration of that debate. And we have all the participants in the debate. They're offering their comments. Again, if you, including the comments of Theodore H. White, who was the noted political historian at that time. He did The Making of the President, 1960s. Unfortunately, many of these people, most of these people, are deceased. But if you want to get a behind-the-scenes look of people from the Nixon side, the Kennedy side, the media side, Sandra Van Oker, people of that stature, including Don Hewitt, who was the director, talks about what his perceptions were going into the debate and after the debate. It's really good historical stuff, and as we celebrate commemorate the 56th anniversary tomorrow, I think if you're a political junkie, you will like what we have on the Facebook page for Museum of Broadcast Communications. Also, I assume that everybody within the sound of my voice is going to be listening and watching the great debate tomorrow night. And immediately following the debate, we will have a debate reaction show on our flagship station in Chicago, AM 560, The Answer. It's immediately after the debate. It's going to start about 9:30 Central Time. Wherever you're listening, you will have an opportunity to call in and offer your instant reaction. Not the pundits, not the official folks, the people who can vote, you. So again, I invite you all, following the debate, watching, you'll probably be watching it tomorrow, but as soon as it's over, flip over to AM 560, The Answer. If you're listening around the country, you can get it on the website, and you can download it, and again, call in with your response to the post-debate reaction tomorrow night. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Jason, listening to us in Washington, D.C. Go ahead, Jason. Are you there?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me fine?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Great. Hey, yeah, I just wanted to talk about, look, you know, we've got candidates on enough ballots in enough states that they can win the 270 electoral colleges, and I'm referring to the Greens and the Libertarians. We've got two presidential candidates that are absolutely hated by the American public, and I can't even stress the word hated, because in most of the surveys, over half the people voting for these candidates are not even voting for them. They're voting against the other person. And we go around the world supposedly spreading our freedom, and in our own country, the suppression of voter participation in terms of candidates getting on the ballot and having adult discussions about issues is being suppressed by this presidential debate commission, which is nothing more than a sham. That's not me. That's Walter Cronkite and the League of Women Voters condemning
it. Okay. Jason, let me just say that if you're a regular listener to the program, they will recognize your voice because you've called in and you've discussed this on several occasions over the last couple of months. And you know that I've been a supporter of what your thought is. I think it should be more than obviously what we're going to be observing tomorrow night. Granted, everybody likes the showdown. They like the show business of it. But again, for the body politic, I think it would be better if you had four people there. However, let me just finish my point, Jason.
Yeah.
We can't have this discussion every 4 years in the 3 months or 6 months leading up to the campaign. The passion that you have, and frankly, the belief that I have, is going to happen from November, you know, when this election is over. You've got to keep the pressure, and you've got to build a greater support for this idea that you have, which is one of media fairness and political fairness. And but again, we're not going to do it in the 6 month window.
That.
And here's the other part of it: we have the third and fourth parties in America have got to have candidates that when they articulate their position, it makes them want to be asked back again on shows. Gary Johnson was on television today. I mean, Gary Johnson, and you know that I've said that I think William Weld is far more an impressive person. Gary Johnson, in my view, is not a very impressive person. Now, you may say, well, neither is Hillary, Donald Trump. That may be true, too. But Gary Johnson is not an impressive, articulate spokesman for libertarian positions. That's your problem.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
And I also know that more people believe in Bigfoot than believe that Hillary Clinton
yes.
is an honest and trustworthy
yes, that's,
person.
It's a bizarre world we live in.
Let me just pivot to one thing, and I just want to talk about the polls, because this is probably the biggest takeaway we want to get away from the polls. CNN had a poll that had Gary Johnson at 7% about a week or so ago. And what happened was, I said to myself, that's strange. So I actually pulled the polling data. And what you found was they under-surveyed the millennials. And millennials aren't college students. They're people without gray hair. They're the people that form families. They're the ones that are actually trying to get a launch off into life. They under-surveyed those people so bad that on the position paper, they had to put NA in as to what percentage of people were in that category. As a matter of fact, the Fox News poll, when we know 43% of the electorate is independent, do you know the Fox News polls, they only sampled 20% independents.
Right.
Now, who is that going to hurt in terms of surveys? Well, I get it.
This is all good fodder for an intellectual discussion which needs to be had over and over again, because you've got to, it takes a lot of time to get through to the media deciders, to the polling data. Now, the one thing that I will say, and by the way, you should take some credit to this, and frankly, I'm going to pat myself back and take some credit too, because I said on this program, based on your phone calls, I said that we would never, ever show a poll on this program, and we haven't, that was not inclusive of a four-way battle. We're not showing any polls at all tonight. And you know what? But here, the media, Jason, here's my point. Media has responded to that. When you look at Fox and when you look at CNN, not every time they use it, but more often than they not, they do show the four-way race, which is, to me, that's the fair way to do it. I want to get everybody. I'm monopolizing your time, but let me get Nick's going to respond as well.
Well, I'm actually going to piggyback on what Jason is saying to some degree, and I'm going to make a prediction right now on your show, Bruce,
okay,
that this election, the 2016 election, is going to be the last one that only focuses on two major parties. I think regardless of whether Trump wins or loses, you're going to be seeing a split in the Republican Party. You may, depending on if Hillary wins, see a split in the Democratic Party as well, and I think you're going to suddenly see some of the things that Jason is calling calling for.
Does everybody Christopher, what do you think? Should a presidential debate include four people?
Sure. Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers warned us about factions, and right now we are a very factious country. That does not mean that we should not have room at the table for various voices, but when it comes down to the election itself, you know, we have to elect someone, and maybe that person is not going to espouse all of my views 100%. We're not going to get 100%, but having participants, having real meaningful discussions is really what is essential in American democracy.
Stephanie, what do you think of
Jason's idea? I agree, but you know, essentially at the end of the day, I don't see the parties fracturing the same way that maybe Nick does, but because I think at the end of the day, our system, and most people understand why it is that we have a two-party system, and that is to ensure that there's a candidate that takes the majority, and that's really what's at essence there.
We're not likely to have that this year, Amara.
I think it would be helpful to have – I like the idea of expanding the platform, of hearing those different voices. Everyone in a democracy has the right to hear from those who they believe represent their views. Now, my bigger issue is not to do it just for show. So within the Democratic Party, we had Senator Sanders was lauded for bringing more to the debate, but then the machinations of the DNC were such that it actually excluded him and prevented him from possibly winning the nomination.
Mm-hmm. By the way, last word, Jason, I'm going to say one other thing. Nick has said that this may be the last two-person presidential debate we have, or at least in this particular year. I'm going to join you in saying that the one thing that I would like to see, I mentioned that 56 years ago tomorrow, the first presidential debate was in Chicago. There has not been a presidential debate in Chicago since that first one. I am calling right now, and maybe this is a Beyond the Beltway effort, I'm saying that in 2020, a presidential debate should return to the city where it started on its 60th anniversary. It should be in Chicago. I'm reaching out public. He doesn't even know I'm doing it. I'm reaching out to the University of Chicago and David Axelrod of the Institute for Politics to join me and others in Chicago, including Newton Minow, the former chairman of the FCC, who negotiated that very first date, who resides in Chicago. I think it's time for Chicagoans to join together. And in the 60th anniversary in 2020, a presidential debate should be in the city of Chicago. I'm off my soapbox. Mike, listening to us on KXLY in Spokane, Washington. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce, for taking my call. With Hillary Clinton, it's the truth factor or lack of. We have Benghazi, where a number of requests were made for security, yet she never said she never saw these requests. We have the Clinton Foundation.
Mike, interrupt you for just a second, because you're saying things that a lot of people are listening to and agree with tonight. Some around the table would agree with what you've just said. But I want to ask you a question, and hopefully you can give me an absolutely candid answer to the question.
All right.
Is there anything that Hillary Clinton could say or do tomorrow that would change your vote? Anything?
No, absolutely
okay.
not.
Or okay. Donald. All right, so you are?
Or Donald.
Or Donald.
Is there something that Donald might do that would make you not vote for him?
Are you going to vote? You haven't said you're going to vote for Donald Trump. Are you voting for Donald Trump?
I am. And the reason I'm
saying that. Is there anything that he could say or do tomorrow that would give you second thoughts and you'd say, you know what, I'm not going to vote for him?
Well, that's possible, but right now I'm voting for Trump because of the foundation, because of.
Okay, you made your point. Mike, thanks very much for your call. I'm just saying, I think we've just heard from Mike, whether you're for Hillary or for your Clinton, if you're watching the debate tomorrow night, you are a cheerleader from one of the sides, and there may be a small sliver of people, and it will be a small sliver, but the sliver is small enough to determine who wins and loses. That small sliver, the undecided voter, or the ones that are not absolutely positively for the candidate that still can be swayed. They're the key tomorrow night in Hofstra.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. I want to ask our panelists the question I asked Mike of Seattle, and that is there anything, and again, we'll start with you, Amara, because I think you're probably going to vote for Hillary, but she hasn't closed the sale yet. Is there anything that Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton could say tomorrow night that absolutely locks you in?
There's nothing that Donald Trump could do or say that would have me vote for him. And I can say that unequivocally. With Hillary, I appreciated the shifting of her campaign platform to incorporate many of the policy ideas, especially as it relates to the economy, that Senator Sanders had. I think she was pushed left. I would like to hear more of that. I mean, that's sort of her ability to meaningfully engage those policy ideas that really excited me about Bernie Sanders.
Do you know what you want her to say, or are you going to hold back until she says something that you will then say, oh, she's got me?
I think I'm just going to listen. I know the things that speak to me are really about income inequality. It's about holding major financial institutions, holding Wall Street accountable. It's about preserving the integrity of the electoral process. Those are the things that are important to me. I can't predict what she will say about it. I do know that her rhetoric has shifted since the beginning of the campaign in a way that has shifted further left as a result of having Senator Sanders. So I'm just hoping to hear more of that from her.
All right, Donald Trump can't speak to income inequality. He simply can't in any sort of meaningful way, I don't think.
Now, I think I know the answer. Is there anything that Donald Trump can say that would make you—
Goodbye.
Okay. Let's ask her. Nick, let me start with you. Is there anything that Hillary Clinton could say that would get you to change your mind, or anything that Donald Trump would say that would disqualify you from potentially voting?
Bruce, I've voted in every presidential election and every presidential primary since 1980 with varying degrees of enthusiasm. I've never been less enthusiastic about casting my vote than this time. And the time that really gave me serious heartburn was when Donald Trump made that veiled comment about people should shoot Hillary Clinton, or words to that effect. And I was like, I don't think I can vote for this guy. So I think if he made another comment like that tomorrow night.
And there were two comments, actually.
Well, the original
one. It's about
the
Second Amendment. He didn't say shoot.
I know, but it was serious enough that the Secret Service went and visited the campaign.
Okay.
So when that happened, I was like, oh, my God, I can't imagine. Am I going to cast a vote for this guy? Okay. I went through some serious soul searching as a result of that, looked at Gary Johnson, even thought about Hillary Clinton as well.
Have any of the commercials moved you towards some degree of doubt?
No. Commercials? No.
What about, Stephanie, my question to you? Anything that Donald Trump can say that would cause you not to support him? Or is there anything that Hillary Clinton could say?
There's nothing that Hillary can do to get me to go out and vote for her. The only thing that could happen would be for me to stay home. And that would be if Donald Trump did something. However, my Donald Trump moment was really a few weeks ago during when it really dawned on me that the media bias just looking for anything they can do. It was even the worst is NBC network. The bias that media has against Donald Trump, especially, for example, the joke he made about the Russians finding her emails. To have people come out and try to seriously talk about treason. And again, these jokes, even the Jennifer Flowers comment, it was very clear that he was making a joke. And Mike Pence even talked about that. Shows to me how far the media is willing to go to tear this guy down.
Oh, yeah.
Was he joking?
I've come to his defense.
No, but was he joking, though, when he—
They've thrown the objectivity out the window.
Was he joking?
Well, actually, on the NRA, interpretation on that was he was talking about NRA activists and the fact that NRA is the most effective lobby in D.C. He didn't articulate it very well, but there is no way that he was calling for.
Is the media and the fear that many conservatives have or Republicans have about the mismatch of media, is that something that a Democrat would acknowledge exists?
Donald Trump has been a freeloader on the media and has used that, and I want to say good for him, but he has manipulated, he is constantly making himself the story.
Until he got the nomination, and then they turned on him.
I don't think they really turned on him until very recently. So, Stephanie, to your there's a bias. When Donald Trump was on the in front of us and making fun of a person with special needs, I mean, that wasn't that I find so distasteful. And I don't need you to respond to that per se, but I find that so distasteful that is acceptable for national candidates.
I've got to ask this before. I don't want to keep it in this segment. Nick, you were the head of an organization or a company called Reputation Partners. What you do professionally is you work for organizations and individuals that need to repair their reputation. Mm-hmm. In your professional capacity, mm-hmm. what would you say if you could sit down with Donald Trump for 5 minutes? What would you say that he could do to repair his reputation?
Don't get provoked. Don't make negative comments about women, and look presidential.
Well, and Christopher made a really good point, and you asked the question. I didn't answer the question. What would Donald Trump do to keep me at home, basically, and not vote for him? And that is, I think, when he does do those very personal, distasteful comments, like making fun of a disabled person or, you know, the one-on-one direct kind of belittling comments. He has made a bunch of those kind of things. And that, if he pulls that out, would keep me home.
Can he? Because the first time we're going to see a man against a woman for president, can he be aggressive towards Hillary Clinton without being overbearing, or does that trigger her use of gender?
I don't think he can. I don't think he's capable of doing that. He's demonstrated time and again that he lacks the ability to handle himself with tact, especially when provoked. He goes overboard in his responses, and I think that will be highlighted tomorrow. It's hard for him to complain about the media coverage once he won the nomination, when he used it to his advantage prior to winning the nomination.
But if he's restrained at the debate tomorrow, it's going to be a win for him.
It's a big if.
Well, we're going to see. We're going to see if when they're like 7 feet apart, whether he's going to turn to her and either call her Crooked Hillary or she is going to turn to him.
He'll definitely call her Crooked Hillary.
I'll bet he doesn't.
Really?
I'll bet he may take the opportunity.
I think Nick and I are together on this. I think he is going to
acknowledge the mistake, but he will follow that up with, "She's not crooked. She's corrupt."
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
We continue from Chicago, and a reminder, if you're watching the debate tomorrow, and I'm sure that everyone within the sound of my voice is going to be doing that, as soon as that debate is over, if you will go to AM 560, The Answer, if you're listening in the city of Chicago, immediately after the debate, starting about 9:30 tomorrow night, from 9:30 to 11, we're going to be taking your live phone calls, instant reaction, and again, you can go to download the AM 560 website, and you can, or app rather, and you can listen, and you can get reaction. Most importantly, we want your reaction. That's immediately after the debate tomorrow night. If you're a listener, a regular listener to Beyond the Beltway, this is your opportunity to call in and participate. AM 560, The Answer, 9:30 tomorrow night. One of the things that we have discussed generally during the commercial breaks, not only tonight but for the last several months when we've had, you know, people who are on both sides of the campaigns for this year, and that is the way in which the supporters of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are, they're so dug in to their positions. It is highly unlikely, and we've just had it in the last segment, there virtually isn't anything that one candidate can say that's going to switch a vote to another candidate, and that's why it is that small sliver that I referenced that everybody is going to battle over on Monday night to try to get their attention. But what has the meanness, the nastiness, the level of this campaign, how has it affected just the interaction that you have in your sphere of influence? And I want to ask you, Christopher, you're a huge Hillary Clinton supporter. You're very active in the gay and lesbian community in the city of Chicago as well.
Democratic Party here in
Democratic
Chicago.
Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
You are a dyed-in-the-wool, liberal, progressive Democrat, and you're proud of it.
Absolutely.
Is there anyone within your sphere of influence that doesn't agree with you?
Absolutely. I have friends and family in Ohio who are who do not agree with me on a variety of issues in terms of where Hillary Clinton, her positions are. I feel it's incumbent upon us. I feel there's a moral imperative that to not close down. I think we see so much of, on each side, of the closing off, the walling off, and not to use a pun here, from the Trump camp, because walls don't
Another
work.
Wall.
Yes, no more walls.
Mexico's
but
gonna pay for it.
I certainly have had a myriad of conversations with Trump supporters, with diehard Trump supporters, and finding there is common ground. Now, you know, are they going to move on their vote? No, that's not going to happen. But I really feel a dialogue is imperative, because whomever wins, whoever takes the general election, they're going to have to govern. And the legitimacy of their presidency really depends on whoever mm-hmm. loses being able to say, we don't agree on a lot of things. We don't agree on mm-hmm. you know, your person's temperament, on economic policies, on immigration. We have a lot of work to do. So regardless of who wins, we really need to, I think we owe it, there's a moral imperative that we start the conversation now of, you know, Stephanie and I may not agree on X, Y, and Z, But prior to coming on the show, we were in the green room with Nick, and we were talking about our differences and doing so in a way that I find productive.
Nick.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think whoever it is that wins, if there's any hope for this country at all, it's going to be the ability to reach across the aisle and find consensual solutions, for sure.
But living and working in the city of Chicago, which is one of the most liberal cities in a very liberal state, it's the bluest of the blue. The question I have is that in social circumstances, in business circumstances, can you even hint that you might be saying something, even saying something good about Donald Trump?
I certainly can't.
You live in a very progressive, Evanston, Illinois, very progressive
our
community.
Our congresswoman lives right around the corner from me.
Jan Schakowsky.
I live right around
the
corner.
She was here a couple of weeks ago.
And in fact, after this, I'll be going to a school parent event, and I hope they aren't listening to the show, because then I will have been outed as someone who's supporting Trump. And to be honest, part of it is because this area is so progressive and it's so liberal, and there is this sense that everybody else is around here. So in a sense, people look at you as a novelty, as if I, landed from a UFO, if I say that I am.
But again, what you're describing in Chicago as a conservative living in a progressive bastion, the same dynamic works for people who may be living somewhere in Tennessee, and everybody that you know, they're all Republicans, but they happen to be a Democrat.
Yes. I mean, I have colleagues, friends, and family that live in other states, in some southern states, and the opposite is – well, the same is true, just on a flipping the coin, where you have Trump diehard Trump supporters, and the willingness to out yourself as a Democratic supporter is seen as a hazard. My concern, though, is the nature of the dialogue between the candidates and between the parties, I think, has created a space in which, because of the rhetoric, for example, that Trump has used, it is empowered or created a space for individuals who really, the ones who are angry, the ones who are frustrated, racists, it's empowered and created a space for them to feel more comfortable bringing out that side, which I think actually inhibits our ability to have meaningful conversations across lines of difference.
This is kind of a loaded question. We live in a country with differing opinions. Is there a place in America for someone who has a racist opinion?
It's perfectly fine to have a racist opinion. If that's your opinion, I have my own opinions. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. But what I think is detrimental is the fact that we have become so polarized that we can't engage with each other meaningfully on the issues because of that coloring, right? So if you're a racist and it means that you can't hear anything that anyone says about any other policy issue, well, then where is the space to even come to any kind of conclusion
on that particular issue? And let's juxtapose this to the police shootings that we've had in this country for the last several years. Let's focus specifically what has dominated television news coverage this past week of what's happening in Charlotte, where protests quickly became riots. And video was either suppressed for a while, and then it came out. And again, the discussion is going on. It's also going on in Oklahoma. It's going on in a variety of places. Can in this climate of a presidential campaign, because in 43 days, we're going to know who the next president of the United States is. Christopher, you're
hopefully
an attorney.
We
hope.
Yes.
Hopefully we
yes.
will know that.
Hopefully
that's
will know
another
the
segment.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about that. But can we have a meaningful dialogue with a resolution on the issue of police-community relations, on the difference between the way that African-Americans and whites frequently look at the same even video and come to a different conclusion. And we should mention that your background is you come from a police family. So.
As does my husband, yes. Right. My father was the county sheriff in Will County, and my husband's father was a county sheriff in Van Wert. So we both come from law enforcement backgrounds. That being said, we must keep the conversation going. The rioting, which has gone on across the country, we can't condone, and we shouldn't say that that is the answer. Violence is never the answer. When you look back at civil rights leaders throughout the history of this country, they have not been proponents of violence. We can't condone violence, but what we must say is the conversation is important. The conversation is just not important. It is essential. And Piggybacking what you said, is there space right now? No, I don't think that there is. We're at an 11 in terms of the volume. We need that space to talk about community, to talk about how people of color see the police. That's again, another moral imperative.
But I will say that the riots are an expression of frustration because for so long it has only been conversations and it's not been followed with policy that actually speaks to the disparity in how African-Americans and other people of color are treated.
I want to follow up on that. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. 43 days to go before election and less than 24 hours to go before the big debate at Hofstra University.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're continuing our discussion about the situation in Charlotte and all the police shootings and how the candidates or what the candidates can say to address the issue. Because I will be dumbfounded if the issue does not come up for discussion tomorrow night. From your perspective, Stephanie, what needs to be said by either candidates?
I think both of them, need to really see like they have sort of a real grasp on what's going on in these communities. That's what's really important, is what is driving this violence? What is driving the crime that's calling in the police and then the police overreacting? I think they have to have that ability to really, really hone in on why this is happening in the first
place. Do you think it's a fair assessment if I were to say that Donald Trump, even though he has referenced in some public utterances the victims of these crimes, the overall image that Donald Trump has in the public as being the law and order candidate is he is a more pro-police candidate.
I would agree.
And
that
Hillary Clinton, she's got to sort of walk the fine
we're
line.
We're absolutely seeing right now what we're seeing is a Richard Nixon 2.0. So before we went to break, or at break rather, we were talking about the 68 election. Lots of civil unrest, lots of unknowing. The unknowing, it makes people uncomfortable. It makes the markets uncomfortable. We don't like volatility, right? And in 68, we see RFK. We see Martin Luther King. So much civil unrest. And we see Richard Nixon, the law and order candidate. And that appeals to what Richard Nixon coined as the silent majority.
Right.
Well, the silent majority isn't so silent anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really hearing. So the riots, while truly unfortunate, and I agree with you that conversations are not enough. I mean, we need real reform. And sitting around a table, while this is fun and entertaining and this is wonderful to do this, we need more than just talking.
Well, and I think one of the things that sort of separates Donald Trump, and he's doing something that I have always called for, wanted to see in prior Republican candidates and prior Republican policies, is he's actually going out and saying, look, these communities where this is happening, they're suffering economically. They're suffering with schools. They're suffering with poor
police. But his platform,
to the African American about what's
community
at heart
of why not is not sufficient.
No,
I mean, we need more than why not me? That you have
or
not.
What the hell have you got to lose?
Right, exactly.
No,
I mean,
Bruce,
hold on for 1 second.
Yeah.
Looking at African American communities and that you have not seen significant improvements during President Obama's administration, right. under prior Democratic presidents, you have not seen benchmarks of improvement. Right. So why not? Why not is not enough.
But that's why I think if to Bruce's question, if Trump talks about law and order and talks about the disaffection in the black community specifically in a sympathetic way, that's what he would need to
and
do.
If he can draw
a link between the frustration and the rioting that exists, the frustration within the black community as to how they're treated by police officers, and then draw a link that those that are out there creating the disturbances, that it is a lack of job, it is a lack of education, it is a lack of a parental foundation. If he can draw that, He will expand the discussion, but you don't think he can do that?
No, I think he is not the best messenger, obviously, because
Absolutely.
It's Trump. However, I think, take Chicago, for example. The state of Illinois has been under Democratic leadership for how long? Chicago is a Democratic city, and yet by every metric, the African-American community, in fact, communities of color, have suffered. So that the Democratic Party has created a platform that allows someone like Trump to be able to come in and say, well, hey, Absolutely. By the way, look at what's happening in your communities, and even though he might not have the how he's going to change that, they created a space where he's able to come in and point and say, under Democratic leadership, this is the circumstances in your community. I get that it's economic disinvestment in neighborhoods. I understand that it's poor access to education. I understand that it's many of these other factors that cause violence and frustration. So now he has the ability to even make the case, and I think it is reaching some people.
Because, you know, people were shocked that this Richard Nixon, this anti-communist warrior, is the guy that goes to China. And when he did that in 1972, people were just shocked that he had the ability to
only
do that.
Nixon could go to China.
Does a Republican, a Donald Trump Republican, does he have the ability to address some of these issues where a Hillary Clinton can't?
What I can say is for certain that he has gotten the ear of many people who would never have considered the Republican Party, but they are frustrated with the status quo. And a Hillary Clinton who epitomizes the status quo, she is the representation of everything that continues to be wrong in so many communities. And that kind of that sense creates a space for a Republican to come in and make the case as to why allegiance to the Democratic Party maybe shouldn't be we shouldn't be so loyal.
If you heard our show or watched our show last week, we had an all African-American panel, and I was stunned at the comments made about the possibility that Donald Trump could run a lot better in the African-American communities than anyone is giving him a shot at. I'm hearing you second that.
I think there's a legitimacy to that notion. I think many people, particularly in the African American community, have felt taken for granted by the Democratic Party because of that party loyalty, and yet seeing by every metric the decline in quality of life. And so I do think that there is a segment that might be receptive to whatever Donald Trump has
to say. But if it's uncomfortable for a Caucasian to admit that they're for Trump, how difficult must it be for an African American to admit that they're for Trump publicly? It's one thing to go into the voting booth and pull a lever or to go for early voting, but we have to think about
that. Put a sticker on your car, wear a t-shirt.
Donald Trump's interest has always been Donald Trump. So
that's true.
When looking at how a candidate may perform as president, we have Hillary Clinton, who I think we could mostly agree, maybe hopefully Stephanie will agree with this, that she has spent her public life as a public servant. Donald Trump has spent his life, Donald Trump, and whether you agree with her positions or not, Stephanie, Donald Trump has spent his life enriching himself. I mean, that really is...
But there's a different way of looking at it. Hillary has spent much time in public service and all along gaining hundreds of millions of dollars through use of her position to build up our Clinton Foundation, and now she's an incredibly wealthy woman. And you could look at it this way, is Donald Trump is the only one of those two who's actually built something, created something, and given people jobs.
Hillary Clinton built them. It was estimated, this was a story when she released her taxes, which Donald Trump has not, as we all know, that the combined wealth was $100 million for the Clintons.
Right.
They have been on the public payroll for virtually all of their adult life. Should that be suspect to somebody, Christopher?
No, that should be laudable that they have given, and I do believe that. I absolutely believe that, that they have given of themselves. They have given of themselves from immediately after law school. They move down to Arkansas. He runs for attorney general, and she starts working with children and families.
And what we have to show for it after 40 years is the value of $100 million.
The wealth
somebody
they have,
was giving something back
the wealth,
to them as well.
And through the
Bernie Sanders may have three houses, but it's not $100 million.
The wealth that the Clintons accumulated happened after the White House. I believe that. I mean, they were not, if you go back to when Bill Clinton left the White House, they were not in a financial position that they are in today. Now, to Bernie fans, the circuit that each of them rode in terms of the books and the paid lectures, that is very problematic to Bernie people.
Yeah,
I don't find that problematic. I personally don't. But to Bernie people, they did not meet that benchmark of what the $100 million, that did not happen until
after
the White
House. But again, if somebody gives you $250,000 for a speech, and again, New York Times had a big story about the power of Goldman Sachs just today. If somebody gives you $250,000, I think the average person who doesn't get $250,000 for a speech would say that the entity that wrote that speech to Hillary Clinton is probably going to be treated differently than the average person.
That is the issue. I mean, I would love to get $250,000 for a speech. However, I recognize that the person or the entity that's writing that check might have some ulterior interest in the speech that I give. And that is the thing. Wealth in itself, being wealthy is not a negative thing. I don't believe that we should castigate individuals who have generated personal wealth for themselves. It is the nexus of your wealth and your integrity. So if you are taking money from a Goldman Sachs or Wall Street banks, and then because of that, you're not pushing for the massive reforms that need to happen in the finance sector, then that's an issue. And I think that's the criticism that many have with the Clintons.
A lot of Trump supporters would agree with that statement, though.
Whether you're selling access to the Lincoln bedroom, as they did in the 90s, or you're selling access to the Secretary of State, you know, as 4 or 5 years ago, I think that's a lot of people have that. And they connect that with this Clinton Foundation, which, you know, there's a lot of questions as to where that money is going as well.
Looking ahead to the debate tomorrow night, it's been said today that Hillary Clinton wants to focus the attention on Donald Trump's temperament, to be saying and doing things that are getting him to fly off the handle and say something stupid that is going to be the lead to the thing. She obviously wants to present herself as someone who's trustworthy and is honest. I don't know how you change that attitude in 90 minutes. That's kind of hard to do. But to get him to fly off the handle, that could be easy. Now, in the case of Donald Trump, he's got to look presidential.
Correct.
Would you agree that if he can't look presidential for 90 minutes, he probably shouldn't be president?
And Stephanie, are you concerned with his temperament?
Yeah. I'm not concerned with his temperament because I'm a believer in it sort of, you know, he's going to make these off the cuff. He makes these off the cuff remarks or whatever. At the end of the day, you have to look at what is it that they will actually do. And when you compare what he does and his success in building buildings, dealing with New York commissions, great. Hillary, her judgment. Let's go back to Benghazi. Let's go back to the
series.
Shortly.
We got to stop and call us when we come back.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Reminder that, again, if you're watching the debate on Monday night, immediately after that debate at 9:30, go to AM 560 The Answer. That's WIND. And you can call in with your reaction. Not the official pundits, real live voters, wherever you are. And, again, I'm especially interested if there's anybody that is not locked in to your candidates. Is anything going to be said that's going to change your mind? And, again, I think that's they're going to – every pundit in the world is going to be looking for someone who's actually changed their mind because of what happened, because I think everybody is basically we have dueling cheerleaders, you know, at least in the spin room tomorrow night. Let's go to Michael listening to us in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Yes, how are you guys doing?
We're doing fine. How can I help you?
Okay, well, I called in a little while ago. I think, you know, when you're looking at the atmosphere, what's happening in the black community with the police and the distrust, I think part of the thing is the injustice. It's watching what's happening, and everybody looks at the effect, right? Everybody looks at the rioting and what's going on there, but nobody actually looks at the, I can't say nobody, but people aren't focusing on the cause. What caused the rioting? What caused that? When these police officers are killing us. Now, I'm a former educator. I'm a former high school principal. Here's what I knew. And I was in an urban school. 100% of my students, for the most part, were dropouts. I knew walking into the building that these things that could happen are possible, meaning I could get cursed, meaning, you know, there's going to be a fight, meaning a child may bolt and run, and all of this really did happen. But I knew as the educator, I had to stay my adult self, and I couldn't fly off the hinges and then say, well, I felt threatened. And that just seems to be the tagline. I fear for my life. And so nobody, the family suffers, and then the police officers seem to get off, and it seems like, as a black man, I can't catch my breath long enough. I know that if I get pulled over by the police, there's a great chance, or a chance, that instead of getting a ticket, I get a bullet. And so I talked to a couple, real quick, I talked to a couple of police officers here in Texas. I got out, I talked to them. I asked a question. I said, what is your battery testing like when it comes to psychological battery tests? He said, we get one. I said, one test? So an officer could be an officer for 15, 20 years, a year. He could or couldn't be racist because you don't know. But the only kind of real testing that happens for them on the psychological level happens one time, of course, unless they shoot a person or kill a person, then it happens again. So what happens to the checks and balances to check on these officers to ensure that they're sane enough, if you will?
Well, I think, Michael, I think part of the answer is, and I think one of the things that hopefully will come out of this current dialogue, and that is there needs to be more psychological training, maybe not just when you get out of the academy. Maybe there has to be some ongoing training, whether it's sensitivity training, whatever it is. There has to be some testing to make sure that the law enforcement officers who go out to enforce the laws have some degree of just sensibility as to what's happening. That has to be weighed, again, however, against a history of being a law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. If you're a law enforcement officer and you are the best of the best coming out of the academy, if all the calls you're answering are in black communities dealing with black-on-black crime, dealing with outrage and frustration and anger that can take place at any arrest situation. You could go into some white communities, people will be very upset if the police come and try to arrest them as well. But again, if all of the calls or the vast majority of calls are coming from the black community, it's going to create a perception in your mind that more and more crime exists in the black community. It's going to create an image of black people that may not, it will create an image of black people as perpetrators of crime because that's their job. Their job is to deal with black victims of crime, and then they try to find the perpetrators of crime. So even if they're not racist to begin with, they can take on the perception of who they're dealing with can set in motion that, okay, these three guys are walking down the street. They're all black. Let's go. Let's stop and frisk them.
Right.
Amara, am I missing your reaction and everybody's reaction to that?
Everybody has biases. As human beings, we have biases. And I think that's the underlying problem. When you have police officers who are human beings at the root, people come with biases based upon their lived experience and, what you said, their perception of different groups. Now, on the notion of black-on-black crime, which there's white-on-white crime. Statistically, crime happens based upon proximity. So the issue would be when you have individuals that are going into the black community who don't have experience in the black community or have biases because of their perception of the black community and then are sent into the black community to be police officers. This is why diversity on the police force is so important. But the notion that there's a perception of black people as inherently more violent is a false one, because if you are policing exclusively in a white community, you will find white on white crime. If you're in the Hispanic community, you'll find Hispanic on Hispanic crime.
But statistically, the amount of black on black crime is considerably larger than white on white crime. I mean,
no, it's
big
not.
Statistically, it wouldn't be. It's based upon proximity. So communities, for example, Chicago is a very segregated city. So if you find crime in on the west side, it's going to be 99% African American. So it will be quote unquote black on black. But the crime that's up on the northwest side will be white on white, because Chicago is a very segregated community. So I think part of the challenge is dispelling the notion that black on black crime exists, or that it's something that's unique and set apart from other crime.
That there is higher levels of black on black crime, or that African Americans commit more crime,
because it feeds
into a very disruptive narrative, which is not helping.
And the other question, Stephanie, I wanted to ask if Michael is still on.
I'm still on. I'm here.
That the officer, for example, in the Charlotte incident was also black. Is it really the issue now? It's police versus the African community rather than, you know, white versus black.
Let him respond. Michael, go ahead.
Okay. So here's a great question, by the way. Partially, yes. But I think when you look at the numbers of white officers that kill young black men, you're going to find overwhelmingly, here's what you don't see. You don't hear about black officers killing white young men. You don't really hear that. You don't really hear about black officers killing black young men. Overwhelmingly, what we're seeing is white officers that are shooting unarmed black men in black neighborhoods.
And the difference is, after years and years of discussions and commissions, the big difference, and it didn't start with Michael Brown, but Michael Brown certainly perpetuated it. It's the video camera.
Well, and here's
the iPhone that catches all this.
I was on this show a couple months ago, and we had this very same discussion. And one of the things that we talked about was that there are statistics out there that suggest that in the African American community, there tends to be a higher rate of resistance to arrests than in other communities.
But that statistic cannot be taken out of context.
Hold on, I'm not finished. I'm just summarizing what we discussed. Then we came up with this idea: why isn't, as part of this education, not only in terms of how police react, but in communities, the education of what to do when you're stopped by a policeman? We even joked about having a PSA.
But you can joke about it. I'm not a person of color, but you can joke about it. And it's not a joking thing.
It's not. But in what we're seeing in a lot of these communities, are not putting their hands up.
Nick's got a comment, and then Michael, and then Amaro's got a comment.
So, Nick. I think the point you made, Bruce, about police training is right on. But I think a lot of what is missing, even in this dialogue so far, are the underlying factors. And the underlying factors are poverty, hopelessness, a lack of jobs, and yes, I think a lack of family structures and so forth as well.
Respect
that's all
for authority.
Of it. And yes, that's it too, but it's a
or abuse of authority.
But it's very tempting for people in any kind of dialogue about this to just slap sort of a panacea solution to it when it's a much more complex issue. It's going to take a lot more time and a lot more thought.
Michael, to you.
It.
Go ahead.
Okay. So a couple of things. One, to your comment, I came up in some rough areas, some rough neighborhoods, abusive family, broken home, and I still came out okay. Now I'm married 19 years with 5 children. So unless you're there and you actually are in the community, see some of the stuff, it's not always like that. That's the picture that seems to get painted. Is it like that? Yes. But is it like that in other communities too? Yes. The other point is that when I talked to the two officers, and he said to me, similar to what you said, I can't think of your name, you know, how you react, the resistance, that's because of the innate distrust based on, again, cause, and we're looking at effect. I say, so if I get pulled over, what should I do? If I put my hands up, I'm shot. If I put my hands on the window, something happens. So he said, well, you know what? You can report, you know, get the badge number, make a report. I said, okay. So I should, now get this, I should stand there, get abused, get illegally searched, be manhandled, and deal with that kind of frustration. And I'm, at this point, I'm livid. I should deal with that and hope that when I file a complaint, that when I take it there, somebody's going to take it seriously. When a gentleman, I can't think of this guy's name, he was robbed in Chicago. I mean, you may have heard of it. He got robbed in Chicago. He went to go file a complaint, they laughed at him. Yeah. They told him, well, what are you doing? He had to call the news station,
right,
get help with the news in order to get his file taken.
You paint a picture of frustration and reality based on your experience, and I don't think it's an isolated incident, and I'm sure a lot of African Americans who may be watching the show this evening totally follow what you're saying. But mm-hmm. The option to that is to be more aggressive, and by being more aggressive, you are more likely to be shot. In the case of Charlotte, and this is my observation of that video, and I don't know what happened before it, the video that I saw is of an African-American backing up with his hands up, and he's shot four times. That is wrong. As a white man, that's wrong. It should not have happened, but that's what happened. That's the way I saw it. Thank you very much. We've got to move on, and we thank our guests. Another segment coming up.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Well, an expected 100 million people are going to be watching the debate tomorrow. It will not only be the most watched political event, it may be one of the most watched events in television history. It'll be tomorrow night. And again, a reminder, if you're watching it, as soon as it's over, flip over to AM 560 and offer your response by calling in to the post-reaction show we're doing for WIND in Chicago. Let's go to Ann, listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. She calls from Big D tonight. Ann, go ahead from Dallas.
Hi. So I wanted to let you know that I am a white female in her late 50s, mm-hmm. and I have been pulled out of my vehicle by the DPS for, one, speeding 5 miles over the limit,
mm-hmm.
and then at another time because they said the grill on my husband's truck was too low and we were pulled out when we were going to a charitable event.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, I am not any different than anyone else who are getting pulled out of their vehicles and harassed.
How did you react in each of those cases?
Well, the first time, my husband and I were separated, and we were interviewed separately. The second time, the DPS officer came up to my window. I handed him my license and my insurance card, and he said, oh, no, we're not doing it that way. And so he said, get out of the car. And I said, what? He said, get out of the car. When I got out of the car, I said, where would you like me to stand in order for you to film this on camera?
But you didn't lose your life.
No, I didn't lose my life.
You had an unfortunate incident with the police, but you didn't lose your life. I think that really, really drills down to the African-American experience, and I'm not African-American, I'm Caucasian, so I'm not here to speak about the African-American experience and their historical their historical relation with the police. But I think my point is, it's Anne, right?
Yes.
You were inconvenienced, and it sounds like, you know,
harassed.
You were really...
I was harassed.
Okay, so you were harassed, but you didn't lose your life.
And I think it speaks to the fact that there are issues with policing generally as a profession. Here in Chicago, for example, we're under a Department of Justice investigation. There's clear police misconduct mm-hmm. to the tune of $500 million in the last 10 years that the taxpayers are paying because of police misconduct. So there are a couple of levels. One is just issues with policing in general and with the profession that need to be addressed head on and unequivocally. And then the other is the racial component, how the police engage with communities of
color. But let's also remember, we all need to remember, this is an incredibly difficult job that the police do. It is. I mean, it's a job. You come from a family where
Absolutely.
They were in law enforcement. God bless them. God bless all the police officers that are out there. That's an incredibly difficult job, not only in terms of solving and preventing crimes, but the social work aspect of policing today is incredible. The
and
burdens
I think that's
on it.
Why public policy
so
in the
I
city
do
does
have...
not support.
And we thank you for your call, Anne.
Public
thank you.
Policy in the city of Chicago does not support. I think if we address the issue of violence is a result of our public policy failings across the board, from the economy to education, to housing, all of those issues that the administration has refused to address head on, and it makes the job of police officers much more difficult.
Absolutely.
My father used to say the scariest thing for him as a police officer on patrol were night stops, because you didn't know who was in the car. The car is dark. You can't see anything. That was the scariest thing for him. If I'm not admitting to getting pulled over for speeding, but if previously in the past I've been pulled over for speeding at nighttime, the first thing I'm doing is I'm turning the interior lights on. I'm putting my hands on the wheel. To Nick's point, yes, the police do, with the resources they have, the majority of the police do an amazing job. Right. The majority of the police.
Here's what I think, and I don't know whether there's any politician that could move this dialogue forward and with this statement. There are African Americans who live in this country. They're poorly educated. They come from broken homes. They have no job. They have a hopeless situation. They have become involved with drugs and or street gangs, and that's part of the life. That's a reality that many African Americans are, not the majority, many African Americans find themselves in that lot. There are many within that community who are absolute, and I'm going to say the loaded word here, they are absolute thugs. There's no social redeeming thing that many of these young men primarily will ever accomplish that will be a positive contribution to society. That's true. On the other side, the police department. The police department has, in many cases, not had sufficient training. And in those police departments, there are young men who are, and some women, who are racially insensitive or out-and-out racists. We've had examples of that in the Chicago Police Department at high levels. Lieutenant John Burge, which we can do a whole show on him. And a lot of people in the white police structure in Chicago knew about what sort of a guy John Burge was. In basically beating up African Americans and forcing them into admitting things that they didn't do. But to have a discussion, we can't have black leaders saying, oh, poor black guy, they're all picking on him. We can't have, that's a bunch of BS. Just like we can't have, as a spokesman for police officers, the head of the union that says, all of our guys are choir boys. They're all angels. We've got to realize that in both of these groups that are part of this, you know, this line, this huge thing that we've got going on, we have bad apples. We have bona fide bad apples in both communities, and we have to find responsible people who, frankly, have the guts and the determination and the honesty to stand up and say, you know what, someone in my group is a thug, or someone in my group is a racist and shouldn't be a cop.
Would you?
That's what we need to do.
Would you? Would you agree, though, that Bruce, that the narrative that you've just espoused, that there are members of the African community, and I'm using your words here, are thugs, that they are
there are some
who are thugs, that has been part of the narrative for years?
I have to say this: the historical supremacy system of racism that has led to policies that have put people in a position where they don't have access to education or jobs or a growth economy or housing. We can't take that historical context out when we're talking about the thugs. They didn't just pop up becoming thugs. There's a history of public policy, again, that has created circumstances where those individuals have come up.
Also a lack of parenting. But, it isn't just public policy.
Yes.
It's responsibility. You decide to bring a child into the world. You take care of that child.
That's part of the
conversation. It is your responsibility. That doesn't exist for a long time. We're out of time. I'm Bruce Dumont. See you next week.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Miss Lewinsky, I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.